Good morning. You are listening to the Lowell Association for the Blind's Lab Radio. Lab Radio was a member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network, your main source of accessible community news and information. We're located in Lowell, Massachusetts. We read local news, editorials, feature stories, and more. Lab Radio is brought to you by volunteers and the staff of the Lowell Association for the Blind. Lab would like to thank the Nancy L. and Richard K. Donahue Charitable Foundation for their support. This morning, I am going to begin by reading several back issues of the Andover Townsman, but with current and important news and information. Well, the front page news of the Andover Townsman for the week of July 2nd to July 8th says, Happy Independence Day. Remembering the Revolution, the Midnight Ride of Bob Allegretto from North Andover. A black powder blast from a musket in a backyard in 1982 fired Bob Allegretto's imagination. It launched him to a vast future of Revolutionary War history, reenactments, and friendships. North Andover reenactors live in a 1695 home that he had physically moved to in 2001 from Marble Ridge Road to Court Street in the North Andover Historic Center. It's within earshot of a field where militia and minutemen once trained. The local farmers and blacksmith mustered there and pursued the British after the shots fired in Lexington on April 19, 1775, sparked the Revolution. Over the years, Allegretto has taken part in 25 to 30 Lexington and Concord Battle Road reenactments and joined countless other revolutionary forays and actions. Events, especially in recent anniversary commemorations, can last throughout the day and be exhausting. When he's dog-tired and just wants the event to be over with, he'll think of the early Americans and how they felt when they fought the war. They were always away from their families, going sleepless and hungry. Some of them are getting sick and dying. I say to myself, they had to ensure this with real bullets flying. Allegretto has joined pre-Revolutionary War historical reenactments, including the 1970 Boston Massacre and the 1770 Boston Massacre and the 1773 Boston Tea Party. He has learned to ride a horse, attire himself with period clothing and uniforms and gear. He has grounded himself in military tactics and protocol of the times, heeding battlefield directions from fifes and drums amid the chaos of smoke, cannon, and gunfire. His likeness in reenactor garb has hung in paintings known for their historical accuracy by Don Trione in the Museum of the American Revolution in Philadelphia, steps away from Independence Hall. His home, with its low ceilings, is a tribute to early America and the Revolutionary. Allegretto's living room, where throngs of friends and fellow history enthusiasts have gathered for parties, is set to look like it did in 1721. His basement is outfitted with a war room stuffed with muskets, swords, power horns, canteens, cartridges, and uniforms. It's here where he readies for the next reenactment. There have been many in the last few years in this 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. Many more will follow as 250th anniversaries correspond to later battles in the 8-year war campaign, ending September 3, 1783, with the signing of the Treaty of Paris. The British have come and gone, but Allegretto has been tracing their steps and those of the pesky and erudite Americans who the nation will cheer on the 4th of July. Over the past 15 months, we have joined and checked in with Allegato 67 to see the American Revolution through his eyes as a citizen reenactor dedicated to preserving our history. See how the Revolutionary War fascination started for Allegato, a 1977 Burlington High graduate and a 1981 Fitchburg State grad, who became a shop teacher and then got into mechanical designs. He said a friend of his wife's family wanted him to drill out a box for musket cartridges. Allegato told the man, a reenactor, to bring a gun. I remember firing his musket and saying to him, "Hey, this is cool. How do I do it?" I went to a reenactment in Arlington and started collecting Revolutionary War kit. Allegato soon got a federal license for selling muskets and has sold some 400 of them. He remembers seeing reenactors on horseback and saying to himself that he wanted to do that. "I never rode in my life before doing reenactment, really." Allegato has portrayed Paul Revere, William Dawes, mounted, as well as British officer in a mounted 2nd Regiment Light Dragoon, a Continental Cavalry shock troop. In December 2024, he rode on horseback into Portsmouth, New Hampshire, reenactment at Strawberry Bank Historical Neighborhood, playing the role of Paul Revere, delivering a message to the local sense of liberty. His message said this was the time to go to Fort William and Mary and take its gunpowder, 100 barrels, small arms, and cannons. The British reinforcements were on their way from Boston to seize the supplies and disarm the local militia. The past winter on Battle Road outside the Hartwell Tavern in Minuteman National Park on February 21st, Allegato joined a fellow reenactor at a celebration of Henry Knox's noble train of artillery accomplishments. Knox was 25 years old during the winter of 1775 with a heavyset Boston bookseller and had read several books on artillery and eventually took command of artillery during the Continental Army siege of Boston. George Washington, the Continental Army general, desperately needed armaments to dislodge British troops from Boston. Washington charged Knox with retrieving heavy cannons, mortars, and howitzers from Fort Ticonderoga in New York and delivering them for positioning on high grounds above British-occupied Boston. Knox and a team of helpers arrived at Ticonderoga in December 1775 and retrieved 60 tons of captured guns loaded by tripods and pulleys onto a dozen of large wooden sleds. The Knox train left Ticonderoga December 5th, according to his diary. The train of sledgers traveled about 300 miles by boat and pulled by oxen and horses over frozen rivers, rough roads, and snow-covered mountains of western Massachusetts. They arrived in Cambridge about January 27. The heavy cannons positioned on Dorchester Heights persuaded British General William House to evacuate. Boston, on March 17, 1776, with troops and loyalists aboard ships that sailed for Halifax. On a cold midwinter afternoon this past February at Minuteman National Historic Park, Allegato was layered in a greatcoat and Revolutionary War garb and wearing a cocked hat. He sat saddled on a red mare. Fellow reenactor John Koopman III, who bears a strong resemblance to the character he often portrays as George Washington, sat high on a larger, dark horse next to Allegato. They fielded visitors' questions about the events and the start of the Revolutionary War at Lexington and Concord. Throngs of visitors, including children, stood nearby on the snow-packed path. Artillery fired in the near distance. a demonstration part of the Hartwell Tavern program. The blast startled Allegretto's horse. His rear legs bucked, throwing Allegretto in the saddle. Allegretto, his cocked hat shifting on his head, held the reins strapping to the horse's halter and settled the animal. In another moment, Calm returned to the snow-covered woods. The history program continued celebrating a pivotal but underappreciated feat in the America's War for Independence, the Henry Knox Artillery Train. There is always the unexpected to anticipate, whether in war, peace, or reenactments. Allegretto is ready for what's next as he continues his reenactment adventures and appreciation for our forebearers. And there is a picture of him in his basement looking at his trove of collections from the Revolutionary War. And also a picture of him as he stands in front of the North Andover Historical Society with fellow men who have reenacted the Revolutionary War. From the opinion page of the Andover Townsman, letters to the editor. This July 4th, remember to honor what we stood for. To the editor. With America's 250th birthday around the corner, many of us are looking forward to the fireworks and backyard barbecues. We're also thinking a lot about what freedom and democracy mean. In this era of oligarchs and billionaires, it can be hard to hold tight to the American ideals of government by the people and for the people. But we can't let those ideals fade. My hope is that we can use this holiday to jumpstart a conversation about how we can work together to build a society that works for all of us. Granted, that sounds a little heavy for a summer weekend. It doesn't have to be, though. The ACLU of Massachusetts has put together a summer BBQ kit, we call it Fired Up for Freedom, which includes fun activities designed to prompt discussions about the future we might dare to create together. And you can download this kit. It is so important that each of us gets involved in shaping our democracy. We're at a perilous moment in our history, but if we take the time to talk openly about where we are and where we want to be, we can build a future that is freer and more equitable, with dignity and opportunity for everyone. We the people are we the powerful. This 4th of July, let's remember that. And this was written to the editor by Carol Rose, who's the executive director of the ACLU of Massachusetts in Boston. Also on the opinion page from Ask Joan, out-of-state visits to in-law require some thought, planning, and communication. Here's a question for Joan. My in-laws moved out of state to be closer to my husband's sister. We used to see one another quite often, so it's been an adjustment. We're planning our first visit to their new home this summer with our two kids, who are 11 and 14. Any tips for making a smooth visit? She answers, a move away from family is never easy for anyone involved. But distance has a way of making the time you do spend together a little more meaningful. And this visit is an opportunity to spend time together in a whole new way. Your in-laws may be excited to show you around their new home, but they may also be nervous about hosting you for the first time. So it's worth putting a little thought into how to make the visit a good one for everyone. Here are some things to consider. Let them be your guide. Ask your in-laws about what sort of activities they would like to do during the visit. They may have some ideas, or they may want you to take the lead in planning. Try to balance high-energy activities for your kids with slower-paced entertainment and downtime. Plan for meals and diets. If you're staying with your in-laws, consider mapping out a plan for meals, with some at home and some in restaurants. Let your in-laws know about any special foods or snacks you'd like to have on hand for the kids. Or better yet, plan a quick trip to the grocery store to pick up those items after you arrive. Talk it through. Before you go, talk with your in-laws about how much activity feels manageable. It's worth talking to your kids ahead of time, too. Their grandparents may keep different hours, and managing expectations on both sides makes for a smoother visit. Be flexible. Check in often during the trip. If something's not working out the way you planned, make adjustments to make sure everyone is enjoying themselves. Focus on enjoying time together. Take photos, share stories, play games, or do group activities that bridges generations. The best memories are often made during small moments. Family visits don't have to be elaborate or complicated. With a little structure and plenty of flexibility, this vacation can be the source of special new memories. I hope this trip is the first of many wonderful visits and new traditions for your family. Are you caring for an older adult or need help finding healthy aging resources? The experienced staff at AgeSpan can help. You can call them at 800-892-0890. The number again at AgeSpan, 800-892-0890. From local news, the Andover Townsman. Moulton releases tax return and criticizes Markey attack. From Boston, U.S. Rep. Seth Moulton has released his latest federal tax returns and financial disclosures in response to claims from rival Senator Ed Markey that he was trying to shield his finances from public view ahead of the Democratic primary. Moulton provided reporters with a copy of his 1040 tax returns for 2025, showing that he and his wife, Liz, took home $956,000 in adjusted gross income, about $120,000 more than the previous year, and they paid $274,000 in federal taxes. The Moultons gave $6,500 to charity, the IRS filing show. The congressman also posted copies of a financial disclosure to the House of Representatives detailing his assets and investments. Moulton, a Salem Democrat, also lashed out at Markey for what he called baseless attacks on him and his family after he requested extensions to file his taxes and financial disclosures. His campaign posted a video of Liz Moulton personally responding to Markey's attacks on their family. "This is not the 1970s, Senator Markey. It's 2026, Liz Moulton, the chief talent officer at Elevate, an executive search firm, said in the video where she criticized Markey for suggesting that the family income is largely a result of her husband's congressional work. As surprising as it may be to you, a woman can support her family all on her own," she said. "The fact that you assume whatever we have earned is because of Seth rather than the career I have built brick by brick tells me that you're the one who is out of touch." Markey's campaign had called on Moulton to disclose finances in the high-profile case Senate race, criticizing the six-term congressman for requesting extensions to file his federal and state income tax returns and required annual financial disclosures to Congress. The three-term senator, who is seeking another 6 years in office, released copies of his 2025 federal and state tax returns earlier this month, which showed that he took home $250,000 in adjusted gross income in the previous year, including $145,000 from his Senate salary. Moulton's campaign dinged Markey for for filing his federal state returns separately from his wife and claimed he is trying to hide more than half his family's investments from public security. The campaign also criticized Markey for not releasing his wife's tax returns and pointed out he has also requested an extension to file his taxes when he was running for re-election against then-U.S. Rep. Joe Kennedy III in the 2020 Democratic primary. Senator Markey manufactured a controversy over a standard filing extension, conveniently hiding his own records from voters, Moulton's campaign said. Unlike Senator Markey, the Moulton family is not hiding any of its wealth. The back and forth between Markey and Moulton over tax returns is the latest volley in an increasing contentious primary race between the two Democrat heavyweights, which is dividing many party members. The Democratic primary will be held September 1st. The winner will face Republican John Deaton, a cryptocurrency attorney and advocate, making his second run for the U.S. Senate. Local news from the Andover Townsman. Accessible kayak launch proposed for the Shawshene River. From Andover, a proposed multi-year project to construct an accessible kayak launch at Nason's Landing is under review by the Conservation Commission. The notice of intent for the accessible kayak launch project was presented to the Conservation Commission at its Tuesday meeting. The Department of Public Works and Facilities Department proposed the construction of an accessible kayak launch, including parking, stormwater management, wetlands restoration, landscaping to improve the existing landing along the Shawshene River at Nason's Landing at 59 River Road. Managing environmental scientist Adrian Lennon of Peace Corporation out of Kensington, New Hampshire, presented the notice of intent on behalf of the DPW. In the notice of intent dated June 9 to the Conservation Committee and the Conservation Director Ben Mead, Lennon said the landing is being upgraded to better serve the community and improve access to the town's water resources. Mead said this project has been discussed for a while and the permit application is now available. Capital funding was first approved for the design of an accessible canoe and kayak launch at the site during the 2023 town meeting. Nace's Landing was identified as the site through a study led by multiple town entities, according to the town's website. The goal of the project is to enhance access to the Shawshene River and create opportunities for residents with disabilities in the community to safely use a kayak launch that is compliant with the Americans with Disability Act in part of the river known as the Ballardville Flats off River Street. Its design includes an accessible dock system and associated parking, stormwater management, and wetlands migration. The peer review process for the project has been limited. Lennon proposed an introduction to its design detailing the accessible components of the launch, its parking, a gravel driveway with a turnaround capacity, and various grading and drainage improvements. There are three parcels clustered together along the river. She noted the entire project is situated in multiple wetland resource areas as well as borderlands subject to flooding that need to be taken into consideration. Significant restoration and mitigation is planned. The kayak launch and an aluminum gangway will be removed seasonally and stored in an upland site. Some residents were concerned about accessible parking and how drives will access and then back out of the spas. Nicola added that the kayak launch is expected for seasonal use and closed for the winter with gated access. The public hearing will continue with the Conservation Commission when the peer review is complete. You are listening to the Lowell Association for the Blind's Lab Radio. Lab Radio is a member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. Lab would also like to thank UMass Lowell's WUML-FM for providing the radio signal that allows us to broadcast 5 days a week. From local news, the Andover Townsmen, Rotary Club of Andover honors community volunteers educated at its annual gala. The Rotary Club of Andover celebrated local residents and educators who have made a difference in the community during its Citizens Who Care and Educator of the Year Gala, which was held on May 14th. More than 325 people attended the event at the DoubleTree by Hilton, where the club recognized unsung heroes whose volunteerism and service embody Rotary's motto, Service Above Self. The annual gala also honored an educator and student who served as role models in their school committee. This year's Educator of the Year was Jeffrey Cookham, and music educator with Andover Public School, who leads the high school and middle school bands. Guggen was expanded the district's Jazz Beds program, introduced new curriculum initiatives, and reintroduced the Winter Pep Band. The gala is one of Rotary Club's primary fundraisers, supporting charitable causes and community programs throughout the year. And there are several pictures of the recipients at the Andover Rotary Club annual gala. And now reading backwards from the Andover Townsman from the week of June 25th to July 1st. Front page news. All Persons Trail opens in Andover. The local land trust has opened its first accessible trail at its most popular reservation to help more visitors spend time in nature and enjoy the benefits of being outside. The Andover Village Improvement Society, All Persons Trail at Goldsmith Woodlands Reservation between South Main Street and Foster's Pond, opened last month. AVIS members gathered with supporters and members of the disability community to celebrate the trail's opening on May 16. AVIS Trustee President Annie Gilbert said on recent hikes, "It's been gratifying to see people who have mobility challenges use the trail and enjoy it since it fully opened." At its official opening, she said she was happy to see that former Commissioner of Disabilities Chair Justin Coppola, who worked to increase accessibility in Andover and throughout the state, and his son, who uses a wheelchair, be able to use the trail, and they couldn't use it before. The 3/4 mile trail was constructed to meet Forest Service Trail Accessibility Guidelines and ensure access to AVIS' most popular reservations could be accessed by visitors of all mobility abilities. The Crushed Stone Trail runs from the parking lot at 491 South Main Street to Bessie's Point, which offers a scenic view of Foster's Pond and a picnic area. It's just beautiful. The accessibility trail cost $350,000 to construct. The project was funded by support from the Boston Foundation, a $100,000 Mass Trails grant, other grants, and individual donors. During the pandemic, we saw how vitally important it was for people to have the opportunity to get outside and experience nature. Unfortunately, it was also becoming strikingly clear that not everyone could access our reservations. AVIS maintains more than 1,200 acres throughout Andover. Goldsmith Woodlands' popularity played physical attributes factored into AVIS's decision to construct its first all-person trail there. There are at least 100 daily visitors to Goldsmith Woodlands, depending on weather, Gilbert said. She added, its location allows for not only Andover residents to enjoy, but people from surrounding communities. one of the biggest reasons an accessible trail also made sense at the reservation is this gentle and flat terrain. The trail was built by the Appalachian Mountain Club professional crew last summer. The crew excavated below the trail surface to remove roots and rocks and brought down the grade of the surface. When you look at it, you may think it's just some crushed gravel, but it took a lot of effort to get it to where it can be reasonably used by people with mobility challenges. Some trees needed to be removed in the process. The trail was approved by the Conservation Commission along with its permitting. Gilbert said Avis needed to work with the state because part of the reservation contained Native American relics. Part of the trail was moved to avoid disrupting those sensitive areas. Avis is focused on phase two of the project to instill a parking lot that is compliant with Americans with Disability Act and continues to improve accessibility and visitor safety at the trailhead with the construction of a larger parking lot. Gilbert said many people park along Route 28 because there isn't the capacity to accommodate everyone who visit the reservation. The goal is to eliminate the need to park on a state highway while expanding the reservation's entrance. Phase 2 is expected to cost about $500,000. Avis has started raising funds for the parking lot and will launch a capital campaign in the fall with a matching grant challenge. Construction in the parking lot is projected to begin 2027. Avis hopes to continue enhancing the trail with benches and interpretive signage. While Avis was not involved in the town's accessible rail trail at Haggis Pond, the community has gone from zero accessibility trails to two in the same year. They are making progress. And there's a picture of several people involved with the Andover Village Improvement Society at the Goldsmith Woodlands Reservation. All those years ago, 100 years ago on June 25th, 1926, the Andover Guild has been granted permission by the Public Works to conduct community playground on the land behind Stowe and John Doe schools adjoining the playground. The program will begin on Tuesday, July 6th, and will continue for 6 weeks. The hours are from 9:30 to 5 each day, with the exceptions of Saturdays and Sundays. There will be games and handicraft, balls, volleyball, races, horseshoe pitching, swings, teeters, and sandboxes. All boys and girls between the ages of 7 and 15, inclusive, will be welcome. The annual outing of the officers and the employees of the Merrimack Mutual Fire Insurance Company was held yesterday, an ideal June day at the Hotel Farragut on Rye Beach. The trip was made in private cars, leaving the home office at 1 p.m. and returning late in the evening. 75 years ago, on June 28, 1951, more than 1,200 persons found their way to Pomp's Pond on Monday, opening day. Six lifeguards and a matron were on duty, all the guards having passed their senior red life-saving first aid tests. Six members of the Andover Draft Board number 62 were announced Wednesday at having been named to that position of honor by the President of the United States. 50 years ago, June 24th, 1976, Governor Mike Dukakis will send a special meeting to the state legislatures recommending approval of a special validating act to allow the town of Andover to proceed with bonding issues approved at the annual town meeting. And 25 years ago, on June 28, 2001, a worker at the prestigious Phillips Academy was arrested on Tuesday after workers told police they had seen a list he had of a dozen people and heard the man say he planned to take those people out. Local news. Artisan Market at the Mills every Sunday from North Andover. The Artisan Market at the Mills is the largest handmade market in North Andover, and it's open from 10 to 3 on Sundays, following its May 31st season opening. The market features roughly 100 artisans and specialty food vendors from all over New England. The markets began in the summer of 2018 and is a collaboration between North Andover Farmers Market and the East and West Mills, with the Village Studio taking over in 2023. This will be a rain or shine event held in the parking lot behind the West Mill. Admission to the market and parking area are free. Leashed, well-behaved dogs are welcomed. From My Towns, the Merrimack Valley, June 2026. Canal Street Transformation. Artists find a home in Lorenzo's Loss. From Lawrence, the immigrant city's cultural landscape is growing with dozens of artists stocking out space at 599 Canal Street in the historic Lorenzo Mill building. The Canal Street Artist Studio stands just short of Broadway, almost a mile west of the city's art, history, and museum hub at Island and Union Streets. The Canal Street artists are shaping their visions in first floor lofts, where mill hands often made textiles for the world. The artists say the space and chance to work with fellow artists make a fertile ground for art and welcome visitors. The studio's painters, printers, tintype photographers, weavers, multimedia artists, and others hone their skills in the seven-story brick and beam mill built in 2002. And restored in 1988. Their mediums are as diverse as their place in their art journey. They range from accomplished professionals, including printmaker Mary Weber, to those restarting or embarking on careers, says Catherine Bagshaw, a designer and multidisciplinary artist. "We all kind of play off of one another," she said. This represents a change. The studio has, until recently, been largely quiet working space where artists come and work on their own. Bagshaw stands just inside the wing entrance and foyer gallery where works by resident artists hang. Here are woven pieces by painter and weaver Nancy Wood, recently relocated from a Somerville studio. Also, a painting by Darren Cole, an image sound artist pursuing a doctorate degree at Worcester Polytechnic Institute. The entry also has space for a group to kick back in the afternoon, host visiting art groups, and hold meetings. A window looks upon a scenic stretch at the start of the North Canal, not far from the old Lawton's Hot Dog, a former Lawrence institution that was there from 1929 to 2010. And the Falls Bridge and the historic Great Stone Dam. Through the foyer windows rest the canal's granite walls, forming a mosaic-like pattern below another brick wall building, this one low slung. The scene looks like an Edward Hopper painting. Back in the foyer, a parlor guitar leans across the couch, awaiting songs from Francis Cavanaugh. Cavanaugh and Henry Jackson of Old Tintype Studios make vintage photographs in the way they were made in 1850. That was right about the time the Plant Industries Incorporated in 1853. An antique box camera stands in the corner to the left with a signature accordion-like bellows in the midsection. Cavanaugh explains that they take a picture of metal into the dark room and coat it with an emulsion of silver crystal, place it in the back of the camera, and make exposures to bring it back to the dark room. The finished product is there within 10 or 15 minutes. "It's like making your own piece of film," he said. "These tintype portraits have old, tiny appearances, giving faces an earnest look, and the background blur on the tin evoking mists of time." When the building was erected in 1902, Lawrence was well on its way to becoming the worsted wool capital of the world, producing the smooth, strong wool used for tailoring clothes, especially suits and also uniforms and gloves. When the building was restored in 1988, it was dedicated to Lorenzo, a builder, and Alfred Palmisino, and the city's immigrants, past and present. Hard work and dedication have made Lawrence mainstay an ethos that extends to the Lorenzo artists. There is a steady current of engagement in the studios, an energy generated by the artists as they work on their projects. Bagshaw likes to dive into research and make multiple preliminary pieces for her project, giving them a layered quality. Americans of a certain age from working class families knows the patches well, square of corduroy or denim from an old shirt or pants that their mother sewed onto holes in pants, knees, and shirt elbows. Lemons and bowls and a series of pears are among the studies of several on the wall. There's a lot of good collaboration here, said a person whose name was Guy. He was Julian Guy, a new artist from New York, living in Malden, and he drives to the studio 3 or 4 times a week. He recently transitioned from a career in creative production to focus on his art. Charcoal, pastel, pencils, watercolor works fill the studio. Some works are from life, others from studies. The Canal Street Artist Studio artists are connecting with each other and the larger art landscape in Lawrence, enriching the immigrant city with new art and new vision. And now a few articles from the Andover Townsman from the week of June 9th to the 26th. Up to the challenge. Andover colon cancer survivor to bike the 186-mile in Pan Mass event. Nicole Hines is challenging herself in a now-or-never moment after enduring one of the hardest years of her life when cancer affected multiple family members, including herself. Haines of Andover is a 46-year-old colon cancer survivor. Her diagnosis less than 10 years ago came as a shock to her as a healthy person. She said she ate well, exercised regularly, and showed no symptoms of the disease. She became an advocate for raising awareness and vocal about getting checks done because of her own journey. She will participate in this year's Pan Mass Challenge to raise money for Dana-Farber Cancer Institute Cancer Treatment and Research. Hines embarks on the 186-mile trip beginning August 1st. Colorectal cancer has become a leading cause in cancer-related deaths in young people. It is the third most dangerous cancer and second leading cause of cancer-related deaths among men and women combined, according to the Cancer Research Institute. Hines followed a recommendation guideline based on her age for screening. At 46, her primary care physician first recommended Cologuard because of a backlog for endoscopy. The test came back positive. She was diagnosed at 46 with colon cancer after undergoing a follow-up colonoscopy. Hines recalled the doctor telling her they knew there was cancer before sending samples to pathology. She received the news while she was recovering from her procedure, remembering being medicated and looking at her husband as if she heard the doctor correctly. Now I feel completely healthy, and I want people, especially in our age demographics, to get themselves checked because you don't know what's going on inside you. She was eager to get back on her bike and get on the road when she finished treatment. She began with shorter rides last summer to get out and enjoy the activity. Haines had a goal in winter to start rebuilding her strength, and that's when she set her sights on the Pan Mass Challenge. I want to do it, but it's very daunting, she said. But I said, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do the full 2-day ride. I'm going all in. Heinz has cycled regularly since the COVID-19 pandemic and participated in other rides and bike tours over the years. The Pan Mass Challenge has always been a bucket list item for her. She will ride in August alongside two friends, one a testicular cancer survivor and another whose family has been affected by cancer. She has raised $5,455 so far. After everything I went through last year, it was a now or never moment, using that momentum to not only get my endurance and my strength back after going through treatment, but also to raise money for Dana-Farber. From around town, local news. Lesser-known stories from 1775 to 1776 from North Andover. Events commemorating the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence continued on Tuesday last month at the North Andover Historical Society. The battles of Lexington and Concord are well known for the shot heard round the world, but have you ever heard of the Battle of Moore's Creek or the Revolutionary War connection between Fort Ticonderoga in upstate New York and Dorchester Heights of Boston? Or the Mecklenburg Resolves? This talk did focus on lesser-known events from the months after the Lexington and Concord to tell a broader story about the early months of all the American Revolution. The event was held at the North Andover Historical Society Stevens Center at 800 Massachusetts Avenue. Introduction to Playwright Course Offered. Budding playwrights can jump in feet first to the craft with a special Introduction to Playwriting course from 10 to 1 on Monday, July 27th to Friday, July 31st at the North Andover Historical Society at 800 Massachusetts Avenue. Geared towards students 9th grade and older, this course will teach the basics of playwriting led by Dr. Bob Kellen. A successful playwright, the students will focus on developing character and studies as they produce their own one-act, 10-minute-long play to be read by real actors before a live audience. For more information, contact the North Andover Historical Society. Tree Committee seeks nominations. The Tree Committee is inviting residents, families, students, neighborhood schools, and local organizations to help identify and celebrate Andover's most important trees. It's part of the committee's Deep Roots, New Branches, Andover 250 initiative. The goal of the initiative is to help find, document, and honor remarkable trees throughout Andover. An important tree may be especially old, large, rare, unusual, historic, beautiful, or meaningful to the community. These living landmarks connect Andover to the path, strengthens the local environment, and reminds us why protecting and planting trees matters for future generations. Nominate trees may be located in yards, neighborhoods, parks, school grounds, conservation land, or other accessible location. Trees must be located in Andover, alive and visible, or accessible enough for volunteers to verify species, conditions, and approximate size. Trees on private properties may be nominated only with the property owner's permission. Nominations are open and will be accepted through September 30th. To submit a tree, visit the Andover Government Form Center Tree Committee. Ask Joan. Vigilant, simple precautions minimize the risk of tick bites. Question. I heard on the news that there is new disease you can get from ticks that make you allergic to meat. Sounds terrible. My husband and I don't go for hikes in the mountains anymore, but we have been for going walks around our town common this summer. Should we be worried about ticks and the new disease? These days, the answer, it's easy to hear something on the news and wonder if it's something to worry about. In this case, ticks, a little awareness goes a long way. Make it a habit to check yourself for ticks at the end of each day. Repellents can make a difference. Use one that contains DEET, unexposed skin, when you go out. When you go for a walk, stick to main paths and avoid brush if you can. Keep ticks away from your skin and make it easier to spot them wearing long sleeves, light-colored ticks. Tuck your long pants into socks for extra protection. Thank you for listening to the Lowell Association for the Blind's Lab Radio. Lab Radio was a member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. There are many ways you can listen to Lab Radio. Request a free specialized radio receiver, or for more information about our radio reading service, call Lab at 978-454-5704. Again, our number at Lab is 978-454-5704. And you can listen to Lab anytime by dialing 1-631-359-9069. Our number here at Lab, where you can listen to our recording anytime, is 1-631-359-9069. And you can also visit our website, where you can tune into Lab Radio. And that would be at LowellAssociationForTheBlind.org. That's all one word, LowellAssociationForTheBlind.org. Thanks for listening.